Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello everyone, it's Thursday morning, the 3rd of March 2022, and you're all very welcome along to The Tillage Podcast. I'm Stephen Robb, coming to you from a sunny Donegal.
I'm Andy Doyle, coming to you from equally sunny Kildare.
And I'm Siobhan Walsh in County Leash.
Since talking to you all last, the world as we know has changed, and that's not an overstatement. I am, of course, talking about the war in Ukraine and Western relations with Russia, which is likely to have far-reaching consequences for all of us way into the future. So this week, I have a copy of the Irish Farmers Journal here in front of me, and it's packed with analysis from all the specialist team on how the conflict is going to impact your farming business. But before we get into this, as always, I just want to take a quick look at what's been happening in the fields over the past week. For many, Tuesday last has been the first day that it really felt like spring. Blue skies, a bit of heat in the sun, and even a bit of drying after the frost cleared up. So, Andy, Siobhan, what have you seen or what have you been hearing out and about in the fields this week?
Well, Stephen, I'm not seeing a lot of action around where I am, but certainly I'm talking to people who have been out with fertilizer, nitrogen, P's and K's, etc. So that's certainly starting. And look, that effectively means the start of spring. In fairness, the bulk of that is probably happening in the south. And it's also interesting to note that both soil and air temperatures have been warmer down there over the last number of days. And that's driving the need for fertilizer.
Yeah, I think similar, Andy, you know, compound and going down in the south of the country. Probably the rain yesterday held up things a little bit, but I think we'll see people going out to plant beans now in the next few days if it stays dry.
And they are forecasting a dip in temperatures over the weekend. So is it wise to be going out with fertiliser this week?
Well, Stephen, the problem that there always is the gap between forecasted temperature and what actually happens. As I look at the forecast for the next week, I'm seeing kind of -2, -3, -3, 0, 2, 0, 0. So yeah, it's going to be cold, and it's colder in the daytime as well, kind of nines to tens. So it's not very growthy weather, but there is a bit of growth, and I think it's going to be much more driven by conditions and the risk of rain further on in the end of next week, and whether or not there's a risk to your fertilizer. I think people will be looking at a workload out there now, but spring and winter work to be done. And I think they'll want to be getting some jobs done and out of the way before they get busy into planting.
Yeah, a lot of soil temperatures are, you know, they're above 6 and some into 7. I suppose they will go down and over the next few days if that frost does come. But like Andy said, you know, you have to divide out your work as well. So, you know, maybe that'll drive people to go out and spread.
Stephen, I think the biggest worry, like in terms of having spread fertilizer, would be the risk of big spills of rain.
Yeah, exactly.
If certainly there's none of those on the in the forecast. I'm not saying that they won't happen, but they're not in the forecast for the next week, virtually anywhere, probably barring the next Wednesday, where there's a fair bit of rain in the forecast for the southeast, I suppose, across the south of the country, southeast, southwest, as in a half an inch is what's in the forecast. But that's a long ways away, and that could change dramatically by then. In the meantime, we're looking at kind of max quantities of 5, and generally 1, 2, or 3s per day in different regions. So look, at it's misty weather as distinct from ballistic weather.
Right, case. Well, we'll get into it here this week. And of course, we're going to start with Ukraine. So where we're at is Russian forces are continuing their attempt to push through Ukraine from multiple directions, while Ukrainians, led, of course, by Vladimir Zelensky, of which admiration for on a global stage is growing by the day, they're said to be putting up a stiff resistance, and that's according to US officials. The attack began on February 24th when Russian President Vladimir Putin announced a special military operation. So Russian forces moving from neighboring Belarus towards the Ukraine capital don't appear to have advanced any closer to the city since coming within 20 miles of the city, and that's what's reported on the ground. But of course, we're not there, so we can't say for sure if that's the case. Again, it's reported that smaller advance groups have begun gun battles with Ukraine forces inside the city since last weekend, but again, we can't be sure of that. I suppose the big thing is that Russia has been met with sanctions, very severe sanctions at that, from the US, Canada, and countries right throughout Europe, targeting the Russian economy, as well as Putin himself and some high-profile oligarchs. So, guys, I guess to begin with, Andy, you would have had, you have done some analysis this week just on the implications on this conflict on grain price and grain price volatility. Indeed, when we were talking to you last week, just as the whole thing was really kicking off, the markets were going berserk. Just explain to us what's happened over the past 7 days, and are markets still as volatile?
The quick answer to the last part of the question, Stephen, is yes, markets remain volatile. Today, by chance, is probably one of the calmest days that we've seen over the last while, with probably only about a tenner of a variation already happened in trading offers today. In recent days and over the past 7 days since we were speaking this day week, we would have seen kind of daily fluctuations, not just daily fluctuations, say within 2 hours, of €50 per ton on futures markets. You know, that is just phenomenal stuff. On the December market, the new crop market, that variation volatility would have been probably closer to €30 rather than 50. And if I just stand back and look at the numbers, and while I'm quoting numbers now from futures markets rather than from physical markets, as I'm speaking to you now, December wheat is trading around, call it 288. A week ago, well, not a week ago, but maybe 10 days ago, that was probably about 268. So it's kind of, and it's been up at 320 in the meantime. And that's just the variability that's been going on. It's slightly back today. Compare that then with nearby wheat. So a March contract on Matif, currently trading this morning at 360, that would have been, that literally knocked on the door of 400 at a different point earlier in the week. And 10 days ago, that was about 270, kind of 260 something, 270 something, averaging sitting around 270. At that time, when that futures contract was 270, physical prices were, for us, probably up around the 310 mark. But now the market is, that volatility is just so strong that nobody quite knows what to do. Nobody will buy if you have a choice, and nobody will sell because you kind of think that there's something better going to come. And there's just nothing going on to kind of give an indication of price. And for that reason, I was really unable to give prices for grain in this week's journal. I talked around it, but not actually about numbers, because there's just too much volatility there at any point in time. If I can just give a very quick background to what the reasoning for this is. I mean, basically, Russia and Ukraine together produce roughly 10% of the world's grain, ballpark 200 million tons out of 2.2 billion tons. But because they're both exporters, and in particular, Ukraine is a big exporter, the two of them together account for 25% of the grain that's traded in the world. So if you take both countries out of the market of available grain, then what we have going on is a clamoring amongst traders and importers to try and get their hands on grain. And that's giving rise to the huge volatility that's there today. I just saw one number in scouring for information in recent days, which would suggest that Ukraine would still have an estimated 13 to 15 million tons of grain to come out for the remainder of this marketing year, while Russia might only have about 6 million because it had put in sanctions in place and there was a big movement of wheat out of the country in the early part of the marketing season. So there's less left to come. So the fact that the Ukrainian ports are closed and Ukrainian grain is unavailable is what's generating that great fear now amongst world buyers and importers.
So, Andy, that 13 to 15 million tons, I mean, that has to be routed through Ukrainian ports, or can it be, is it transported via land? Or do we have any idea even if the Ukrainian ports are still under Ukrainian control?
I don't know the answer to that, Stephen. Having been in the Ukraine with ITLIS some years ago, we visited a number of ports, and in particular, the one that's in the news at the moment is Kherson, down in the south, because it controls the mouth of the Dnieper River, and there's contrary reports as to whether or not it is under either Ukrainian or Russian control. But it would be important. But in the short term, basically, Ukraine and the ports have made the decision that they're not exporting anyway, and therefore being in control of ports is arguably irrelevant when they're not working. It is relevant to the future, of course, but not to the present.
So is this volatility, and it's probably a difficult one to answer, but do the markets see this as short term, or are they factoring this in for the long term?
I think the way one should answer that is that the bulk of the volatility is seen in the short term. The expectation is that agriculture will respond to a demand driven by price, which will drive up production in many other countries to enable the world in theory to almost bypass Ukraine. But they can't bypass Ukraine and Russia together. And for as long as sanctions are in place against Russian exports, there will inevitably be a shortage of grain next harvest. I think one of the other things that's there as a big uncertainty is whether or not Ukrainian farmers will be able to progress with spring planting. Will they have the fuel inputs, fertilizer, chemicals to manage the winter crops in the ground to take them to harvest? And will a Ukrainian business, all of which are big in scale, will they make a decision not to plant at all by virtue of the risk to solvency from the expenditure that would or could be incurred in the meantime? They're all questions that nobody has an answer to. But in the short term in the markets, the real enthusiasm is to get grain now, and therefore the big prices are reflected in the nearby prices. I think, after that, it'll be a matter of markets will respond as the situation unfolds.
Well, just on that, Andy, on the planting and crop management implications in Ukraine, I mean, surely within the next 4 to 6 weeks, that picture will become a lot clearer. And at that point, the market will have had a chance to react to the unfolding news.
Yes, Stephen, the market will react to the unfolding news every day. And, if you watch the trading screens live, basically, whenever you see a flurry, they've got news before I've got news. So they've got something that spurred a reaction one way or the other, and their business is news. You know, they're getting information from anywhere and everywhere. It doesn't have to be the truth. It's just news, and they will respond accordingly. So, yes, that situation will unfold on a daily basis from now until the crops are in the ground. And while 2 weeks ago, I would have referred to the consequence of weather impacting on grain markets through North American wheat, through South American maize and soybeans, etc., and even into parts of Europe. From here on in, it will be war news and war reporting that will be the predominant driver of markets over and above and on top of the weather issues. And, you know, as I'm saying this to you now, I'm seeing that there's a fiver gone off of March wheat. And look, that's just the way it is. That's what's happening. It's lost €6 from the time it opened today. And that will continue. And in an hour's time, that could be plus 30.
Yeah, an incredibly difficult market to trade in and to predict. It's by default, it's unpredictable at the moment. And of course, grain and markets, grain markets rather, isn't just the only commodity which is being impacted by this conflict. Energy has come into sharp focus over the past week as well, particularly oil and gas. So crude oil quotes topped $110 a barrel this week, and Europe's wholesale gas price hit an all-time high of 193 euro per megawatt hour as the Russian invasion in Ukraine continued. Now, that 193 euro per megawatt hour figure, that is massive. Let's not underestimate that for a second. So try and put that in context. You know, the cost of biomethane produced from anaerobic digestion plants, albeit it was pre-price rise, so up to about a month ago or so, the cost of producing that was around 89 euro per megawatt hour, and that was deemed as being a premium, as a premium price. So that just gives you a sense of just how high prices are at the moment. And of course, you know, there's real concern. There's a lot of sanctions imposed in Europe at the moment, but in Russia at the moment, sorry, by Europe. But, you know, ultimately that could really come back to hurt Europe because we're so dependent on Russia for our energy. Anne Finnegan this week, our colleague Anne Finnegan, page 26 in Agribusiness Pages, has done a really good analysis of just how dependent we are in Europe on Russia, albeit now Ireland isn't dependent, but many of our European countries are. And by default, what happens there happens here in terms of market movements. About 40% of our natural gas comes from Russia. Around 30% of Europe's crude oil comes from Russia, and around about 42% of Europe's coal comes from Russia. So a massive, massive dependency on it at the moment. And as a result, you know, we've seen real calls this week to ramp up our indigenous renewable energy production, particularly gas. We would have seen calls from the Renewable Gas Forum of Ireland, from the European Bioenergy Association, to really rethink our policy on renewable energy or renewable gas production from anaerobic digestion plants. And it's just interesting that in the context of all of this happening in energy markets, we saw kind of the first, what I would deem as modern anaerobic digestion plant, secure planning permission this week in Tullamore. It's quite a large plant. It's around 50,000 tons in processing capacity, or that's what it'll take to feed it. But once it's operational, it's going to produce around 40 gigawatt hours of renewable gas injected directly into the grid. So this plant, it would have come under severe opposition. It's just on the outskirts of Tullamore, being developed by a company called Strategic Power Projects. Got a lot of opposition from residents complaining of potential odor and noise, traffic issues and whatnot, all of which were dealt with in the subsequent submissions to Ambord Pinala. And Ambord Pinala deemed it suitable and necessary to grant a planning permission. So I think that's that's probably a good news story to come out of all of this. And I do think over the coming years now, we are going to see a rapid upscale of AD production in Ireland. Whether or not there's government grant aid or not, because this is, you know, this is a private company developing a private project here for the marketplace, without any support that we know of. So really interesting, really interesting developments this week off the back of Ukraine.
Sorry, Stephen. And do you know what's going to feed that plant, or do you have any ideas what will go into that plant? Like, will it be slurry? Will it be beet or maize or grass?
Yeah, well, they've made a point to explicitly say that no municipal waste is going to be used to feed this plant, which I suspect was a big concern of the residents around Tullamore. So they said the majority of the feedstock is going to be sourced within 10 kilometres off the plant through a network of farms and whatnot. We don't know specifically whether it's going to be grass silage or hybrid rye or beet or slurry. We just don't know that makeup yet, but we do know that the company themselves are in partnership with a young farmer called Nicholas Malloy in Offaly, who, as far as I can understand, in a way will be sourcing the feedstock. Whether he's grown it, I'm not sure, but will be sourcing the feedstock on behalf of the AD plant. So there's a real good opportunity for him to grow his business even further. He's a good young progressive tillage and dairy farmer. So that's quite positive to see.
Yeah, and you have another report in then this week. Is it from the SEAI on methane and the suckler herd?
Yeah, really interesting report as well. It's on page 11 on the news pages of this week's paper. So the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland published a national heat plan. Basically, it was a roadmap on how we were going to decarbonize our energy usage in the heat sector. And heat is notoriously tricky to decarbonize. Any renewable heat schemes thus far have been pretty poor, if I'm being honest now. So basically, it was wide-reaching, went across multiple sectors, but they did focus quite heavily on bioenergy, which was good to see. But among some of the measures which were contained in the report was specific measures for AD, for anaerobic digestion, how they're going to ramp up the industry. But basically, they were saying that the AD industry was going to increase while the livestock herd, national herd, decreased. So basically, to run you through it, and there's a lot more in the paper online this week, they looked at two scenarios. The first one was a 10%, two scenarios in terms of movements in the national herd. The first one projected an increase in the dairy herd of 10% by 2030, but a decrease in the suckler herd by 23%. And they estimated that some of the slurry and grass from those farms, particularly grass sourced from the suckler farms, which had reduced numbers, would deliver around about 2.7 terawatt hours worth of biomethane by 2030 if it was all supplied through a network of ADE plants. That would be 5% of Ireland's total current gas demand. And then under the second scenario is a hell of a lot more radical. So they still projected a 10% increase in the national dairy herd, but they modelled in a 45% decrease in the suckler herd, or about a decrease of 440,000 animals. And as a result of the increased availability of land for silage production from that suckler herd or from those suckler farms, it would deliver an extra 1.4 terawatt hours of biomethane, equating to around about 8% of total current gas demand. So the SEA, again, this is only a report, but you know, the government does take a steer from reports like these in terms of forming its policy. And unless the SEA knows something we don't in terms of concrete herd reduction targets. But anyway, the SEA, based on their numbers, are saying that there is the potential for anything between 135 to 255 farm-based AD plants in Ireland, depending on how much the suckler herd will reduce by. So really, really interesting reading, and really interesting, I suppose, direction which the SCEA are proposing for agriculture and for the national herd. Much, much more on that in this week's paper, Siobhan. But okay, guys, look, there's some big implications of this conflict, and it is arguably, it is going to impact all of us. But on page 18 this week, Siobhan and Andy yourselves, along with Darren Carthy and Aidan Brennan, have run through some measures on how we as farmers can de-risk our farm business from this conflict. Do you want to just run us through a couple of the points that you have in the page?
Stephen, I might just throw in the ball by saying that, you know, from the tillage sector, probably the biggest single risk to us is fertilizer. We are kind of fairly safe on the chemical front for the year ahead. And the major risks probably are being felt in the consequences of fertilizer and the consequences of higher cost feed for the animal sector. And, you know, we're kind of being asked, would tillage farmers engage in the production of fodder crops? And the answer would be, look, we've always been engaged in the production of fodder crops, but the market isn't always there. And I'd say a lot of people are unwilling to get into a market that is potentially speculative. If things change, you're left with it. But I think the important thing for I suppose, the country to remember is that if tillage was to divert more acres to forage, it will mean less grain. And lots of other people depend on grain availability. And while we are big importers, you know, you can't take for granted the fact that there will be affordable grain available at ports or through ports in the future. The guess is that there will be, but I think that we have to think carefully about the actions we would take and the consequences and unintended consequences of them. So I think the easy one that we can kind of suggest is that we would, in a sense, grow our crops and then put in the catch crops in the back end and use them for forage to substitute the need for an amount of winter feed in that way. So that's the easy one. That's complementary feed rather than a substitution feed. Siobhan, you might make another comment or two on that.
Yeah, so I suppose there's other things as well, like maize and beet and things like that. And I suppose in 2018, when there was a drought, there was quite a few agreements set up between people to grow, for tillage farmers to grow forage for livestock farmers. And some of those agreements have lasted. And I suppose if you're going into an agreement, you have to know the person, you have to trust the person, maybe get a payment up front. And we had an article in the paper last week about forage contracts, and really, you know, a contract, the most important thing is that you know the person that you're selling it to and that you trust that they will pay you and that you have an agreement set out on when those payments will be paid, and you know how many acres are to be grown and that you'll do your best to grow a good quality and high yielding crop. So I suppose just, yeah, trust is the main thing coming into those arrangements. And as Andy said, you know, cover crops or catch crops, which can be forage crops, so, you know, forage rape, some of the kale rape hybrids or stubble turnips, I suppose are lower risk, that, you know, that if a livestock farmer doesn't want the forage, those crops will still have a benefit to the tillage farm, that they'll soak up fertilizer that was left behind, and they'll also return organic matter to the soil.
Yeah, I mean, with an existing arrangement or arrangement was carried on since 2018, you know, that's okay. That trust is likely there. But, you know, for a new arrangement or a new solution to overcome the challenges that every sector, the livestock sector, would be facing in terms of feedstock at the moment, that's incredibly risky for a tillage farmer, especially if, you know, whatever about the forage crops after or cereal crops or whatever, but for a purpose grown forage crop like maize or beet, which is input intensive, let's be honest, you know, I don't think a handshake's good enough, you know, and even a contract's not good enough. There has to be a payment of some kind, so there does, to give the tillage farmer that degree of security to go off and do this.
One of the other things, Stephen, that's worthwhile saying in that conversation is that if you get movement of slurry to offset the cost of production, particularly of maize, that in a sense represents some level of commitment. It doesn't guarantee a payment, of course. If you're trying to look at potential margins from a fodder crop versus potential margins from a tillage crop, it's difficult to do. Just because you don't still know how much you're going to spend on fertilizer or what the value of that grain is going to be, leave aside the fact that yield is always uncertain. So it's a difficult one to kind of just pin down in advance. But in the event of a commitment between two people to grow a crop as cheaply as possible with the help of slurry that's coming onto your land, that's something that is worth considering for people, because the effect is not just a 1 year effect, and it may also bring somebody to realize that there is another potential solution there for the ever increasing problem of nitrates on some livestock farms, particularly some of the more intensive dairy farms. You know, the option to get them out and be able to sign it out and have it not as a constraint on how you manage your own business.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, it's not inconceivable that this year, you know, we're seeing a rethink in terms of European energy security. We might see a rethink on EU food security. You know, it's not inconceivable that we might see a shift in the conventional Irish farm model this year. You know, Maybe this could be the catalyst to encourage that inter-farm cooperation, which we've talked about for so many years now, and we're really only seen in 2018 to any massive degree. But I guess time will tell. So look, guys, we will move on from this. I think just to finish up our Ukraine discussion for this week, I'm just going to throw it out there, and it's off the back of our editor, Justin McCarthy's editorial on page 2 this week. And he's more or less talking about the EU's energy and food policy and whether or not it's fit for purpose. You know, that we've seen some major targets in the Farm to Fork strategy, and we're seeing some major changes coming down the line to agriculture across Europe and in Ireland. You know, and I guess the question is now, is it time for a rethink? Is it fit for purpose whenever there's so much uncertainty in terms of food security? I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, Stephen, if you kind of stand back over the past three caps, probably right back to the time of WTO, the world had a vision, certainly Europe had a vision, that everybody should help everybody and that trade would be part of normal daily business, and that we would have, you know, ships that could freely roam the world hauling this here and that there. And I guess all of those thoughts are possible because we hadn't had a war, particularly in Europe. We hadn't had a war of any sort for quite some time, well, at least on the borders of the European Union. And I think when you stand back from it now, and particularly that exposure to Russian energy, you know, that leaves everything so vulnerable going forward it really would have taken a war, unfortunately, to wake people up to the realities of the direction of travel, where it was taking them. I know it was a long time ago, I would say more than a decade, if not a decade and a half ago, that I would have commented to people that all the savings that they were making on food production at the time and their kind of ongoing in real terms would eventually be siphoned into the need for a security force to secure access for the food routes into Europe. And, you know, ironically, that's kind of the way it's unfolding. I didn't ever wish it would unfold that way, but it seems to be the way that it is happening now. Because there will always be somebody out there who is willing to create havoc in the world. And the fact that it's on our doorstep has really caught a lot of Europe off guard in this regard. So I think there is a need to reappraise. It might not be as radical as we would want it to be, but it's interesting to have people even this week standing up in the European Parliament demanding that food security be addressed within European policy. You know, that's what Europe was about. And it was, in particular, people in the European Parliament that put in place policies that, in a sense, took it away from having an emphasis on food security over the decades. So, you know, I guess what goes around comes around.
Okay. I think we'll watch this space very, very carefully in light of ongoing events. So look, we're going to move it on here now, guys. Siobhan, what do we have in Footprint Farmers this week?
We're just basically catching up, Stephen, to see what the Footprint Farmers have been doing in the last while. And I suppose a lot of them over the winter took the, and indeed the last few weeks, took the opportunity to plant some hedges on farm to try and, you know, improve some habitats on farm and to increase their carbon sequestration. More of them are acting on their soil tests. So they've, it's a picture of Kenneth Reid getting lime spread on his land there. And I know others have been out, you know, spreading, making best use of their slurry. We tested all the slurry and applying farmyard manure as well. And Gareth, our tillage farmer up in Loudgard Culligan, has sheep out on his cover crop. So that was one thing he said when he joined the program. He said, look, I want to integrate livestock onto my farm. So he has sheep out grazing his cover crops. And Padraig Connery down in Waterford also has cover crops as well, and he was out rolling some of them in the frost. And just when we were talking about work earlier on, I know Padraig was out spreading some compound on his winter barley. So he's down south as well. So plenty of work going on the farms, and look, we'll keep you updated as time goes on in the programme.
Excellent. And I believe we also have the finalists of the Dairy Gold Malt and Barley competition. They were announced during the week.
Yeah, so four finalists from four different regions. In Tipperary, it's John Murphy. The South Mid Cork region, it's Gordon and John Bryan. North Cork, John and Mary Jones. And East Cork is Declan Keneally. And look, the finalists, I suppose, they're chosen on grain quality and the best samples that have come in. But then as the farms are judged, you know, there's a big focus on sustainability. And just reading through the farms, I'll put this up online tomorrow, but you know, there's good rotations on all the farms, conscious of habitats and biodiversity on a lot of them, soil sampling, making nutrient management plans, and making good use of slurry. And quite interestingly, there's two of the farmers are selling beet locally, so there's good integration with other sectors as well across the farm. So look, we'll have that online, and best of luck to the four finalists, and we'll find out who wins shortly, I assume.
Okay, good stuff. We'll keep an eye out for that over the next week or two. So Andy, looking to the week ahead in terms of weather, is there going to be more field work taking place over the next 7 days, or what are Mid Éireann saying?
I would say, Stephen, if the forecast comes to pass, the answer to that question is yes. Now, they're given rain for today across all of the country, and all I can say is that I haven't seen any rain here yet. Maybe it's still to come because there's a little bit on Friday, so maybe it's kind of to run through Thursday night into Friday. But generally speaking, quantities are small across the week, and a number of dry days, but arguably not as many dry days across the country as there were in last week's forecast. But rainfall quantities are small. Like whenever you're getting 1 mil, 2 mil, 3 mil, generally speaking, if you're running a plough, you'll keep a one pass running behind it. Once the ground is dry enough to begin with, certainly should be dry enough for traffic on tram lines to get any remaining work done, to get fertilizer out, etc. And I think we will see an amount of work done as we head into next week.
Okay, good stuff. Look, guys, there we're going to have to leave it for another week. I will just say that for more on Ukraine, particularly its implications on fertilizer, listen to our sister podcast Down to Agribusiness, which is available online, and of course pick up a copy of the Irish Farmers Journal in shops. So for there, we will leave it for another week, and from Andy, Siobhan and myself, Stephen Robb, thank you all very much for listening, and until next week, stay safe, stay tillage farming.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.